talk is Back to the Future, Basic Training. So, Pat Dickers.
I'm just the mouthpiece for this. I'm just a grubby old field geologist, and happily have had the collaboration of Jan Grau with the USGS, with colleagues at New Mexico Tech. And the purpose of this talk is to point out the pre-site specific training that astronauts already receive. And part of the basic training curriculum after astronauts join the Corps has been a week-long field exercise in northern New Mexico. Just for reference, the numbers there are the Apollo and Luna landing sites in true distance referenced to the geologic map of the U.S. Something to think about. Here's where we're going. Back to the future. How do you explore any planet? Those of us who've been in a variety of resource and research exploration, one of the first things, and something that's available now that we did not have in such abundance for Apollo, were satellite observations, remotely sensed data, spectral data, something that not only allows us to narrow down our objectives, but also introduces another level of mystery and questions to factor into our field plans. Enlightened reconnaissance, testing robotic gizmos of all kinds, with and without humans, and making the best use of the human integrative capacity and the increasing capacity of robotic assistance. And finally, what you can only get by going out there and smacking rocks. This geologic map of the moon, this was telescope-based. This is what we started with. In the Taos Plateau of New Mexico, several reasons for the initial selection of this region for astronaut training after Apollo was there are good examples of large and readily appreciable geologic structures in this part of the Rio Grande Rift. And the other thing, and this came up in the context of the crews becoming stakeholders in what you observe, in what you take away, and what you take to the moon. Apollo training was conducted here. And there is, to see the current generation astronauts standing on the edge of the Rio Grande Gorge, where Scott and Irwin stood with their simulated backpacks, it reinforces the sense of we are explorers and we're going there. Like this. There are basalts that are morphologically, and I don't know to what degree compositionally, but morphologically homologous, analogous to basalt flows on the moon ranging in age from 3.1 to 3.8 billion years. Gary's description of standing on the rim using the telescopic lens to telephoto lens to bring in details of the strata on the other side of Hadley Rill. These are places where you can not only get a sense of what the human eye mind instrument can resolve, but what you have to do to capture that. What we cover in basic training is not, once again, not moon-specific. The major changes in this field training that were introduced 10 years ago arose in part from an image held by the then NASA administrator of white-suited NASA astronauts on the red planet. So many of the things that we test, instruct, and lead through this trip also have applications for Mars and for the feed forward from lunar investigations and onward into the rest of the solar system. But in essence, we cover planetary processes, terrain analysis, using images, as Ron so beautifully described just a minute ago, using images and seeing the different kinds of data you can take away in that manner. Sampling. How do you sample? What are the diagnostics? Again, avoiding jargon. And in that category, one of our most prized comments in review of the trip over time has been, there were no acronyms. So, and when you're in the NASA culture, I'm afraid that comes with your Cheerios at breakfast. But the other thing is physical properties. What do the physical attributes of rocks? What are the implications of that for altimetry, for gravity and magnetic data, for any form of remotely sensed data? When we teach using the images, in this case, we're beside a very viscous high silica rhyolite flow on the edge of the Rio Grande Rift, and we are looking at stereo photos of this flow and of analogous flows in other parts of the world to start creating a sense of what shapes, what flow characteristics, what compositions can you infer from morphologic data. Sampling and classification. One of the most instructive exercises in sampling is at a point where basalt flows from fissure basalts alongside the gorge near on the Taos Plateau has interacted with a monster alluvial fan coming down out of the Sangre de Cristo. That fan carried metamorphics. It carried both metabasaltic and granite gneiss clasts, sedimentary clasts. You're standing on layered basalts, and the object is, okay, you've landed, you're having rover trouble, you've got to collect a sample, you've got to sample everything that's here. Go. And everyone brings the collections back, and we do an exercise in classification. You can classify those rocks by shape, by color, by density. And once you do that, what can you infer about composition? And from composition, what about origin? How would you expect a rock that looks like this and hefts like this to have originated? So without getting into the Mohs hardness scale and without getting into the range and olivine compositions from one end to the other, you can convey a whale of a lot of information about origins of big rock bodies in a reasonably accessible way. And some of the groups have, without hints and coaching, collected the dirt, i.e. regolith. So part of this is seeing everything you see and sampling everything you see. In 1999, we began the geophysical training and set this up specifically as a geophysical sim for Mars exploration. The selection of gravity, we test drove a shotgun shallow seismic rig, and at that time the logistics of marshaling that and getting a program laid out was too ponderous to pursue at that point. My ultimate goal, of course, was to run traverses along the same line using different geophysical methods, as Drew was talking about and as their group is doing, to show what different content the different data types can give you. But the main criteria for going with gravity at first were that non-destructive, requires no external energy input, the instrument is low mass, low volume, and it has already gone to the moon. The edge of the rift, the far right-hand side of the top profile there, once you've done your field mapping, once you've looked at the remote sensing data, once you've looked at all the well data, the bones of the rift are reasonably well understood, but up against the mountain front, up against the blue Pennsylvanian rocks at the far right end, there's a lot of alluvium, both rift basin fill and material coming down straight off the mountain front fans, which masks young faults, some of which are quaternary, some of which displace the quaternary alluvium. But there are others that that you suspect are there but are fully masked. The other thing that you have here in terms of, well, first of all, an excellent density contrast between dirt and rock, and contrast between carbonate sedimentary rocks and generally mafic basaltic flows in places. The other thing you have is a good contrast in magnetic susceptibility. While we were not able to orchestrate a seismic plus potential fields co-traverse, we were able to do companion gravity and magnetics profiles. And the magnetic susceptibility contrast between the Precambrian basement in this area, and particularly with the dirt, is nearly ideal for resolving buried structures. But the driver for this, the driver for doing these geophysical exercises in this place, was a real-world problem. This is the Taos Valley. Water is the determinant on life here. Water. And those buried faults under the dirt of the rift fill are what control or limit or divert groundwater flow in this area. Our first exercise was in 1999, the next in 04, and the next in 05. Our first exercise defined the sharpest inflection at the far right side of the profile was a fault with thousands of feet of displacement with no surface manifestation. And it helped to explain some of the differences in depth of aquifer and groundwater flow in this area. Our line on Taos Pueblo, this was in terms of stakeholders. For one thing, gringos are rarely allowed to work on this pueblo. And through the high-level diplomatic efforts of Paul Bauer at the New Mexico Bureau, and through gaining the trust and collaboration of the elders of the Pueblo, we were able to work on their land and help them answer questions about where their water was, how much they might have, possibly where to go to look. The big thing is that this project was not make work. This was first a simulation for exploration, and at the time it began, exploration on Mars. Mars base, where we radioed all our data, was a pickup truck parked some miles away. We were in radio contact. It was all orchestrated in a unified manner. But the other main issue is that this was addressing a real world problem. So, crew buy-in, oh yeah, it's real. So, the comment about concealed structures, the value of the different kinds of data, we can talk about that after the session. I know that I'm out of time. The community buy-in, taxpayer buy-in, and crew buy-in was solid and immediate. I'm just going to raise a teaser here because this was something that we introduced in the context of Mars exploration and the whole aspect of chemosynthesizers, extremophiles, and how do you go about looking for potential signs of life. And now that we know, we have identified vents, volcanic vents on the moon, as Ron showed us just a minute ago, are there non-aqueous or aqueous seeps and springs? Could any of these harbor old dead things that'll give us some clue about the possibility of life, not just on Mars, but maybe even on the moon? And once you get those samples back to the HAB, once you have some of the modern instruments that we now have available and that have been miniaturized to the size of your hand, we might even be able to answer those questions on another planetary surface. Trying to get there.
Well, thank you, Pat. We're going to move on because we have three more presentations before the session ends, including a report by Matt Deans and Pascal Lee that we advertised. So we'll go on to the next talk, and the co-authors are Eileen Yinks, M. Schmidt,